Hey guys, welcome to another podcast episode. The podcast has been going great with the help of our Yeti Blue Mic microphones and our Skull Candy headphones, and I wanted to make sure that if you're digging the podcast, if you could, please rate it on iTunes and possibly leave a review, maybe even subscribe to it. We would love that because it helps out the podcast's profile all around online and on iTunes. It's kind of odd because depending on where you log on to the podcast on iTunes, there are different reviews in different places. For example, if you log in directly through iTunes, there are different reviews than if you just check out the podcast online. But I do appreciate all of them. There are some reviews up there already. One from a guy claiming to be or calling himself Ian Gillen, saying that it's his favorite podcast on iTunes. Thank you very much, Ian. Pete C. wrote in and had some really nice things to say about the podcast, too. Thanks a lot, dude. Stacy said, it's Danko, enough said. Rob said, it's really entertaining. Adam says that I'm the man, so thank you, Adam. And up on deck for this episode is Patrick Pentland from the rock group Sloan. Sloan are a four-piece rock band from Canada, more specifically Halifax, Nova Scotia, Canada. All members reside in Toronto now, and they've been consistently churning out superior rock music for 20 years with 10 albums strong under their belts. If you haven't heard them, I suggest you go directly to the record store or iTunes or wherever they've got their records and buy them immediately. Bands like The Strokes and Jet have cited them as influences, have taken them out on tour, and I think Jet, if I'm not mistaken, has even gone on record as saying that Sloan are the reason or the biggest inspiration for them to start their band, which is high praise indeed. We have known Sloan, since year one of our band, and all four guys in Sloan, one way or another, have all been very helpful and supportive of us. So when I asked Patrick Pentland, singer, guitarist on stage right, to sit in on this week's podcast, he easily agreed, and despite some technical difficulties from my end beforehand and Nick's late audition that delayed his arrival, all went as hoped. Check it out yourself. Here it is, the official Danko Jones podcast with our guest, Patrick Pentland, sitting in, starts now. We have started the podcast. The official Danko Jones podcast is now in session. Sans Nick Flanagan. He's actually on his way. He's coming from an audition. But we have our guest this week. We have our guest from the legendary rock, Canadian rock group. You guys are icons in Canada. The guitarist, the singer, the songwriter, the man, Mr. Patrick Pentland. Patrick, how are you doing today?
I'm good. That's quite an introduction.
Yeah, man. Thanks for coming down.
No, I appreciate you having me.
It's Nick is actually, he just texted before we turned on the mics and he is on his way. He's at the subway and he's briskly walking over here. So
excited.
He should be coming in as we speak and here we are. So it's great to have you here. And I think that our paths have crossed many times over the years.
Yeah.
We share the same building where we practice.
Yes, we share the same wall.
We've been there. We've both been there for over 10 years.
Yeah, probably since it first opened up.
Yeah, and I think JC was the one who told Chris about it.
Maybe that could be.
Yeah, or Michael about it. I'm not sure. But we recently moved to the space next to you guys.
Mm-hmm.
So we hardly practice there, but you record there. So whenever we're practicing, we have to stop.
We don't record there that often, but every time we are recording there, you guys are rehearsing there.
Well, it just happens that way. Now, because our drummer, Adam, lives in Los Angeles,
right,
when he comes down here, the sessions are massive, and we can't risk having you guys shut us down. So we go, actually, there's another kind of pay-as-you-go building. We go there now.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Well, we're not in there that often. I know JC, I think, was saying to Chris that you guys were going to be in the beginning of next month.
Yeah.
For a few days. But yeah, we won't be using it. I'm recording tonight, I think,
You are.
Yeah, and we still get bleed from other bands, too. So it's not, it's, you know, we have our rehearsal space is a studio, and it's in a rehearsal building. So there's nothing we can do about the fact that people are going to rehearse. We've recorded probably 4 records there.
Right.
As well as using other studios at the same time.
Now, when you record your records in the studio, in that practice space studio, do you bring in the producer? Does the producer come in?
We usually produce it ourselves, and then we usually do it in conjunction with an engineer.
Right.
For a while, we were using our live engineer, Nick DeToro, and now we're using Ryan Hazlett, and he's done the last few things. And he worked at the Sony studio, which is the other studio we used to use when we were signed with Sony. So, and he also does guitars for us, and now he started to do front of house. So
right.
We keep everybody busy with multiple jobs.
Yeah.
Cheaper that way.
I've noticed that. The people who are with you are with you for a very long time.
Sometimes, yeah. Yeah, and doing different jobs. We have our friend Kevin Hilliard has worked with us selling merch. Then he sort of did merch, but he had like a little radio station at the merch booth, and he used to would DJ and sell merch and talk over the microphone in between bands. And
oh wow, that's crazy! I didn't know you were
then,
doing that.
And then now he's doing lights for us, so it's just like, you know, move him around. But and he's also shot videos for us and taken photographs. So there's several extra members of Sloan floating around.
Yeah, I've always noticed that. And Mike's still with you guys? He's kind of the fifth member?
He's our manager.
Okay. Oh, here's Nick. I guess we should just pause and wait for him to show up. Is he? Okay, here we go.
How's your time doing?
How's what?
Your time doing?
It's not been wasted. It's been
okay. Oh, it's been nice.
But you guys know each other, right?
Yes, we know each other.
Yeah, so I made the error of thinking that Patrick and Nick were friends from way back,
I met him one time.
But Nick emails me last night going, "So what are we going to talk to Patrick about?" And I said, "Well, we'll just freewheel it." And then you told me you can't really freewheel it. Because you met him 8 years ago.
Yeah, I mean, we could talk about that one thing and focus on the minute details. But I don't know if that would be fascinating to anybody, including
us. You were saying that we met in L.A.
Yeah.
At a Deadly Snakes show.
Right. I went on tour opening for the Deadly Snakes as a comedian in 2003.
And how was that?
It was fine.
Oh, yeah.
It was one of the better experiences opening up for bands. I just burped in my mouth.
Okay. That's nice.
Was that audible? I always pretend it's not audible when I
burp. Well, now everyone knows.
But you can edit that out.
Whether they
but
heard
we're not
it or
gonna,
not.
I'm going to demand you.
Crossfade that.
You've made
it. Because I was remembering that I was thinking about how Max from the Deadly Snakes, I guess you guys had pulled up on Hollywood Boulevard and he got out, went into a tattoo parlor and got...
Yeah, he got a tattoo.
A symbol, like maybe the symbol that was on the record or something, but the guy did a bad job of it. So he went right next door to the next tattoo parlor and got the guy next door to try to do it better.
I do remember his impromptu...
That's insane.
Yeah, the Max from the Deadly Snakes got an impromptu tattoo, which I think is insane in and of itself, personally.
Mm-hmm. Tattoos?
Oh, God.
As Patrick is displaying his short sleeve t-shirt.
No, but I do think that you need to plan it out a little bit.
You do. Would you have gotten the tattoos you have impromptu?
No.
I mean, I got one tattoo. It wasn't quite impromptu, but it was close to impromptu. And I don't regret it, but as I heard someone else once talk about his tattoo, he just said, it's there.
No, I have friends for sure who just have lots of tattoos that they just kind of got, and then they end up getting them covered up later and cost like a lot of money.
Yeah, my friend Katie has straight edge tattoos. I mean, she broke edge in the late 1990s, and
it's always fun to see straight edge, old straight edge people with their tattoos, and they've got a beer in their
drunk,
hand.
Yeah.
She has the word punk in like baby block letters, lower cap. But that's not as bad as my friend John. These are all people I was in Brutal Nights with.
These are all your Brutal Nights,
my Brutal Nights
cohorts,
Ottawa punk friends. All had like all the '90s tattoos that you didn't want to get in hardcore. Like my John. has like a rotor on his foot, you know, like a gear.
Oh yeah, yeah, like he's a robot.
I don't even know. Yeah. At least no one's got a barcode that I know of.
Well, I know somebody who has a barcode actually.
On back. But
I think she got it. Yeah, I think she got it.
Ironically,
I'm gonna say she got it in late '80s, but I bet it was in the '90s.
That's a 90s thing.
That is, and no one's thinking barcodes in the 80s, tattoos. No one was getting tattoos.
Did they even have barcodes in the 80s?
Sure they did.
Okay.
I don't know. But anyway, let's not talk about people's tattoos and stuff because it's unfortunate for some people.
And there's a lot of people who listen to this podcast.
With tattoos. With tons of
there's a lot of people, period, with tattoos.
Yeah. You know what? I kid because I love.
Right.
I was going to bring up the whole thing about my first time I met you.
What? When was that?
It was kind of, I think it was at the first Sloan show we played with you.
But now I was wondering, because I always remember, was it at the concert hall?
Yeah, it was at the concert hall, and I think Jail played as well after
I think we played, maybe, or we played two nights, and you guys played one night and they played one night.
Maybe that was it too, yeah.
I remember that Chris was nervous because you were going to be on my side of the stage. And what part of what you were doing at that time was chugging like a whole thing of milk.
Yeah, yeah.
And it was going to be all over the stage. And he was like, Patrick's going to freak out. And I was sort of like, I'm not going to freak out. What are you talking about?
But that's now I even remember it better. It was Patrick was going to be pissed off if you drink the milk. And when we were doing sound check, the stage manager just went right up to us and said, no milk, no milk. And it was Patrick. Your name was bandied around. And I was like, okay, well, that's cool. But before we opened for you guys, I saw you at the subway. I can't remember what subway station. I was on one platform, and at the opposite platform, that you were on the train on the opposite platform. The car you were in, the seat you were in, stopped right in front of me, and I was standing at the opposite platform.
Yeah.
And you looked at me, and we just made eye contact for more than 5 seconds.
What?
And the train went by, and I go, that guy knew who I was, and he hates me.
I don't remember that.
Oh, I totally remember
that's
that.
That's the funniest.
Yeah, but you know,
subway hatred, that people, thing where someone looks at you. That's the worst thing is when people think, we all think when someone doesn't acknowledge you for any reason.
Yeah, exactly. They hate you.
But the truth is, like,
they're not even thinking about you.
You're not thinking about it.
You're probably thinking about, you know, whatever you're going to have for dinner that night.
Yeah.
But for me, it registered that way. And I was really cautious around you. I didn't hate you back.
But I didn't hate you to begin with.
I know. But Jay and Chris were, I think, the first people that I came in contact with you guys. And then we were on tour together.
Yeah.
This is on tour together. And it was in Saskatoon backstage.
Louis.
Yeah. And there was this kid who did a zine or something.
Nice.
And we were kind of sharing a dressing room.
Yeah.
And it was you and Andrew. And I was there, and I think JC was there. And the kid turned around to me, and he just goes, yeah, you know, I just thought that about our performance. I just thought that you weren't like, you know, you weren't being sincere enough, or you weren't, you know, you weren't, I didn't really believe it. I think
some
something
more
like
90s.
That. And then both you and Andrew just like came to my defense. I didn't say anything. You guys came to my defense. And then I was like, oh, maybe that thing at the subway was just a passing. He didn't think like that.
Oh, wow. Yeah.
So it was all, that was all going in my head. But
how
it was
far
that
into
moment.
The tour was that?
We were like a week into the tour, yeah, man. Right. But I was, you know, you up to that point on the tour, you were, you know, nice. I mean, we probably exchanged some, you know.
I'm sure that I was probably shy, or sometimes when we're touring, especially these days, like I don't even show up at the venue until I absolutely have to go on stage, basically, because I just get nervous and I get... I don't like to watch bands, not so much you guys then, but like these days, if I watch a whole band set, I feel like I feel exhausted by the time I go on stage.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah, I feel that way too. I'll catch a song or two to be courteous.
But it's hard.
But yeah, I just feel like I got a job to do. I'm not here to hang out.
Yeah, you know? I agree. It's the same way, I think.
Well, when you're 20 years into doing that, it like on a professional level, and then five, 7, 8, how many years of it? 30 years of rock?
Yeah, no.
Almost
25. 25, yeah. Right? Yeah. You guys celebrated it?
At least 20 years. Yeah. 20 years, but I've been playing in bands before that, too.
Right.
You know, not professionally.
So but. You've put in enough time that you can just check out.
We often bring bands out on the road with us, and then I don't, like, we brought Dearly Beloved with us the last time, and it was my thing, and I like them. I think they're a great band, and they're great people, but I only watched about, you know, 8 songs in like 3 weeks.
And that's almost a set.
Yeah, same with me.
You kind of put it all together.
Yeah. We brought out the Biters, the Biters from Atlanta. And I love those guys. They're so awesome. And yeah, I'd check out one song. There's a couple of times on the tour where our dressing room was just next to the stage.
Yeah.
So I heard their whole set.
Right.
And it's great to hear a band that you like before you go on, just to pump you up.
Yeah.
But no, I wasn't on the side stage going, for the, you know, 18th time of the tour.
Yeah.
But that's how it is.
No, I was thinking about that tour because around that time your cabinet had blown up. And so for at least one show you were using my cabinet and Eric, our guitar tech,
I remember that.
Called me over and he was not happy and you're playing and he's pointing at the back of you were using an Ampeg bass head, I think, and he's pointing at the back and the tubes are glowing bright every time you hit a chord and he's like, they're fucking renting cabinets from now on. They're not using your cabinet. And I was like, what are you talking about? Like, I don't care. And he's like, they're going to blow your cabinet up. He was like freaking out.
We stumbled onto this website that you write for, and it's like, it's kind of like a celebrity watcher, like a celebrity reporter.
It is like I got hired by Simpatico to be like a personality blogger guy, like because I'm in a
Perez
band.
Hilton type.
No, it wasn't to do with at that time. It was just
it's more like Huffington Post or something.
Well, it was just supposed to be Patrick from Sloan, whatever you want to write about, and this was a whole different thing. And so I started to do, it was called Discord, and I started to do this.
I read a few pages of those.
Some of it was music-based, some of it was just about my life. And then it didn't really do that well because they weren't promoting it properly at Simpatico, so I got moved over to do celebrity stuff because my ex-wife runs that portal for Simpatico. So she's just like, why don't you just come write for me, and then I'll be able to get you on the front page because we get along and everything. So
That's great.
So I started writing, but it meant that I had to start writing about Kim Kardashian and like all these people that I don't really know anything about them. And
you wrote something about Demi Moore
last night. I know. I was late posting yesterday because I had a migraine all day. So it was like I was going to do it today because I have to do it. I was sharing it with Dan Levy, who used to work for MTV and his father, Eugene Levy.
Yeah.
And now he's not doing it. So it's just me doing it every day. I used to just do it once a week. And then it was twice a week when Dan was involved. And now I've got to do like a little fluff sort of video piece Monday, Wednesday, Friday, and then my own blog Tuesday, Thursday. So now it's like a full-time thing. But I was going to post today, and then luckily last night it turned out that Demi Moore is going into rehab. So I was just like, oh, wicked, I'll write this. So now they put
it is lucky she's going to rehab.
Yeah.
Good for her.
So I have to know all about this stuff. And the other weird thing was that I've done some interviews for them as well, which I'd never really done before. And I interviewed Moby.
Yeah.
And I had to do it like live on the internet, like over a webcast. I'd never met him. I'd
like
never
a live
done
stream
it
kind of thing.
Yeah. And people were writing in questions. And then I was sort of like the commentator or sort of host. Mm-hmm. I was super nervous and I'd never done it before. But the part of the reason why I was nervous was because about 6 months before that, I had written a piece about how Moby had been complaining about how Britney Spears and whoever else, Rihanna or something, is like emotionless fluff music and commercial, like just made for commercials. Yeah. And I was like, the headline was something like, "This just in, grumpy old man doesn't like new things." And it was basically like, yeah, of course you're going to think that because you're 40-something years old. Like, they're not making music for you. They're making music for teenagers. So, and he sold every one of his songs on his play record to commercials.
Yeah, very famously. Yeah.
But he was a super nice guy, and I respect him. And then I went to see him play, and he's like whining out on guitar the whole time, like wah-wah pedal. Like he's like a guitar
wasn't
player.
I saw him at Lollapalooza in like the mid-90s when the Moby thing wasn't the instrument, like the stuff on play, but it was like techno hardcore kind of. Because he was in hardcore bands.
Yeah, he was in hardcore
bands. Yeah, when Fucked Up did that like 24 or 12-hour show to promote the release of their album in New York at a record store, I think one of the gimmicks was like Moby came and yeah. played with them on a song.
Yeah, he was. We walked in, they were doing like Whole Lot of Love or something. They were doing a Zeppelin song, and because he had this woman singing like an amazing voice, because he does not have an amazing voice. And
how does he reinvent himself that drastically?
Well, I think it's probably what he'd been doing live for a while, but like people weren't really aware of it. He did a whole thing, like he did a little talk on stage about the wah-wah pedal and like played little licks and stuff. And he's not a bad.
He's one
player.
Of those guys now who like just has his fan base.
Yeah, you know? He doesn't. Like, he wasn't there. He had a new record out, but he wasn't really promoting the record. He was just out on tour. Yeah. He played the Phoenix, which I thought was small, but it was packed with tons of people my age and younger. My girlfriend's considerably younger than me, and she was totally into it, like going crazy, like because that was her time, like when she was a teenager, that was her stuff. And
did you bring out Christina Ricci to carry him for that song?
No,
that would be cool.
I mean, Kim Kardashian, for instance, is just like bread and butter for these people because celebrity writers, because it's just ridiculous. I've never seen her show, but I've written about it many times. I just have to like Google everything, you know. And all I do is go off, and then all these people write in their comments, and they're like, you know. They think they're talking directly to Kim Kardashian or something. And it's just like, you know, or like, you know, why don't you leave these people alone? You people are horrible, you know, and they have no idea who I am or what I do. Yeah. So they're always like, this journalist, what, blah, blah, blah. Like,
it's funny, but they're combing the celeb blogs. Yeah. And
why
sites.
Don't you leave these people alone so I don't have to robotically comment on this?
I know.
Like, I can't resist. You can edit. That's the beauty of the internet versus, newspaper is, it's not like a retraction the next day. It's like an edit and then maybe a quick bracket saying, sorry, we changed this. It's
no, I go in and change things after the fact, for sure. People will be like, you spelt this word wrong, and I go back and change it and don't even tell them. And then
and they just go, oh, what? Yeah.
But that's not a bad gig. And I mean, are you enjoying it?
I do enjoy it. Yeah, I do. I mean, and I was always a little bit interested in Hollywood anyway, and just the hypocrisy or the weirdness of you know, the star system and stuff like that. So you have to work hard to not know what's going on to a certain extent, I think.
Yeah. And then you're that guy who's like, I don't have a TV.
Right. And I know. And I'm
kind of like that a little bit. I have a TV, but I don't. We talked about this before where I have my shows and I don't know any of the shows.
Yeah.
Other than my shows.
Yeah.
I didn't know who Kim Kardashian was until.
You never saw that porno.
You know, I'm at Shoppers Drug Mart buying. Yeah, you whatever, see, and I keep tabloids, seeing her face on the People magazine, and then eventually it sinks in somewhere. It's going to sink in, but I'm not the one on the Vanguard just telling everyone about Kim's.
She is famous because she made the best porno.
Yeah,
isn't that weird?
Well, Paris Hilton too. She made a porno.
I mean, it was really the same as the Paris Hilton one in terms of like douchey guy, you know, like
Colin Farrell made one.
Yeah, but that one was more like stolen or something. You know, the Kim one was stolen, the Paris Hilton one was stolen, but I think in my head, the back of my head, I think that there's something that was used to the advantages of them for those sexes. Right. And by Rick, I think Rick Solomon and Ray J might have been the people who like actually leaked those in order to really capitalize on them, but it definitely didn't hinder. I feel like Kim Kardashian was less hindered by it because everyone was like, I'm so glad I saw your butt, your crazy butt. Thank you.
Yeah.
And Colin Farrell probably has many more tapes.
Yeah, well, that was, I saw, I don't want to say that I've seen a lot of the celebrity sex tapes, but I have seen most of them. I've seen ones of people who I don't know who they are.
Yeah, I haven't really seen any of them.
I got them. We'll see it after the
podcast. Yeah, we'll watch them together.
We'll make
some popcorn.
On a couch.
You ever see that movie Diner? We'll do the popcorn scene from Diner while watching.
All right.
But
there's Kim Kardashian, there's Vince Neil, there's Tommy Lee and Pamela Anderson, there's Bret Michaels and Pamela Anderson.
Yeah.
I'm a big porn head.
Yeah, I'm just running down the porn tapes. When I've been tweeting back and forth with the Sloan Twitter feed, we had this thing at one point where we were going to beat you in terms of Twitter followers, and I tweeted something, and then you tweeted back, And then you and I met at some party, and you told me that you'd gotten a lot of hate tweets from people going, fuck that guy. Yeah. Fuck him. Fuck him. I know. It was so obvious that we were just joking.
Like about you, people who were like,
I was thinking
about Danko Jones.
Yeah. And I think I was even saying to people, no, we're friends. We know those guys. Like, it's not a big deal.
But that whole thing, but you know, maybe it's just once again in my head, but I just feel that that is how people in Canadian music or Canadian rock view us as, like we're the first, you know, any move that we make, that's, they misunderstand us and misunderstand every move we make.
I was looking at your form spring there yesterday.
Oh yeah.
And it's, I mean, it seems like, and I've always felt this because I used to read the Sloan Forum in like the 2000s or late 90s, and it seems like you have very dedicated fans who have very deep questions about a lot of aspects. Maybe it's because of the songwriting portion. There's so many songwriters in Sloan. There's so many songs, so many albums now. People are just like the amount that they're asking.
People
really
have grown up with Sloan.
Of course, yeah.
When I remember when we were playing shows with you guys, mm-hmm. we did that tour, when we did that concert hall tour, I had a job at a coffee store, and one of the girls who worked there, she was maybe 15, 16. She worshipped you guys.
Yeah.
And the fact that I was playing with you guys, I became like super cool overnight.
Yeah.
It was awesome. And now she's probably, you know,
dead.
In her late 20s or early 30s now. And she's, right. You know, people have grown up with the band.
Well, I got that. I got added to the Sloan mailing. I wrote a piece or something about Sloan. I was on the mailing list, and you guys had that download album of your singles.
Yeah.
And like I keep listening to it. It's like the best album. It's like I don't even know if that's like
you played it at your night.
I play it all the time.
Oh, yeah. At your comedy night.
At the comedy night. I played it when Scott Thompson was up. We played like the whole record all the way through, and it's like it's crazy. It's like it's so solid in terms of a singles collection. It's gonna be really funny when all said and done, like it's going to be impressive. I think it's going to.
It's already impressive.
It's already. I was so impressed. Is what I mean. Okay. It was, yeah, I just wanted to phrase it in a way that.
How many
was
albums do you guys have?
Ten.
Like, 10.
Yes. 10 official records and then other records, like
right.
live record and B sides.
But 10 is how I count it.
I thought that the release of that though was also really nice and a really kind of smart
download?
Thing to do. Yeah, because it was almost like a reminder of like. At least for me, I really felt like, oh man, I'm an idiot.
A lot of people, there's not too many bands like Sloan anymore where they're kind of like, I guess people have called you like Canada's Beatles, where every member in the band takes sings their songs, and it's like Kiss, how Kiss was with their solo albums. And I think it's really unique still in music today. And everyone's got strong tracks. There isn't, I feel, maybe you have your own personal issues, as we all do in bands. But I feel every member contributes solid contributions on every album. There isn't one guy who's like, all right, I'm got my little folk tune, guys. And you guys got to be nice and let that track on the album. Is there some sort of,
process?
Well, more than a process, just more of a... Do you guys kind of criticize each other that way?
Like, no, not
Andrew,
really.
Seriously, we can't have this fucking track on.
No, it's pretty much whatever you want to do.
Wow.
But so I think people bring responsibility to it as well.
Yeah. But you always fucking come out with the solid two rock tunes.
Yeah, I usually have at least one on a record. Sort of my job.
And I want to end this podcast, if I could. Like, we always play out.
Uh-huh.
Like 40 seconds or something.
Yeah.
With backstabbing.
Oh, okay.
If that's cool.
Sure, yeah.
Because that's a pretty rocking.
That's one that a lot of the quote-unquote hardcore fans don't like. But I like it.
What is their problem with
it? I love it.
I think they don't like the lyrics or something. I don't know. I never pay attention to lyrics.
Yeah, you know, Sloan fans always strike me as studious.
Yeah.
Yeah. And that will get you some hate mail.
Well, maybe it's because Patrick's been rocking the glasses. Patrick and Chris have been rocking the glasses on stage for years.
So that makes us smart?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
We both got Ray-Bans on.
Did you rock the glasses? I don't rock glasses when I'm on stage.
Oh, I always take my glasses off on stage.
No, I used to.
Chris and Patrick? No.
No, I used to, but I don't anymore. I mean, I wear them all the time.
Yeah.
I have to now, but I guess that maybe became part of our thing. I don't know. I never really thought about the glasses.
I did, because I'm always, well, I can't wear them, and then I have to find them after the show. Where the fuck are my glasses?
You know.
Have you guys played Saturday Night Live?
No. The only thing we've done that way is Conan O'Brien.
Right.
Ah, you did Conan O'Brien.
But like a long time ago. You
know. How was that?
Nerve-wracking. It was nerve-wracking, but yeah, I think it was December. It was like December 23rd. So it was like everybody's out at parties. They're not watching
Conan O'Brien. Christmas parties, right.
But, you know, it was cool. It was good to do. It was, and it's not live like SNL. Like,
yeah.
It is live in front of an audience, but if you really fucked it up, you could do it again. But we met Max Weinberg in the elevator, and he was just a super not friendly guy.
Wow.
He's known to be a prick.
Really?
Oh, apparently, wow. They did a Secret Santa that Christmas, and he refused to participate. I mean, he's Jewish, but like he refused to, like, this some poor girl didn't get a present because Max Weinberg said he wasn't going to buy her a present.
And then he didn't come with them.
I think he was touring, wasn't he?
Yeah.
Yeah, but I mean, sort of dissolved, yeah. It seemed, at some point, the Conan thing.
And well, so who's is Max Weinberg now?
It's like La Bamba. It's one of the guys from the band.
Is now the guy that he talks to all the time.
La Bamba.
He's
Los Lobos?
He's the guitar player, isn't he?
Yeah, he's the guy with the mustache, and he would always get deferred to.
Yeah,
you know, he was like the guy after Max Weinberg that would get addressed in the band. Mm-hmm. And I guess he's running it. And I think there should be a Max Weinberg Neil Peart buddy movie, just about prickly drummers. Although now I feel awkward picking. You shouldn't really pick on Neil Peart at this point.
You know, I sent a fan letter to, not really a fan letter, but a letter to Neil Peart in 2004.
Uh-huh.
Just going, hey, you know, I'd put out a spoken word record and I'd read his books and I you know, whatever. And I'm a big fan. I got a response in 2007.
Really?
3 years later.
From him or from somebody
from
else?
Him.
Oh, what, wow. What did he
say? Took him 3 years, but he wrote me back. And he wrote, it was on a postcard with his picture on there. And he just said, hey, thanks a lot. I'll check it out. And whatever I had said, I'd forgotten what I'd written, but he responded to the actual letter.
That's cool.
In 2004, we were touring so much, I just moved back home and kept my stuff there. Mm-hmm. And I was there. And in 12 months, I think I was there for four.
Mm-hmm.
And I didn't want to just keep paying rent. Yeah. So I had all my mail forwarded to my parents. So when I moved out, like 2007, it's 3 years later, my mom, I met my parents for dinner, and she goes, oh, this just came in the mail, and she just threw it on the table like it was a postcard,
mm-hmm.
you know, and I looked at it, and I'm like, oh, my God, do you know who this is? Yeah. Like, this is a letter for 3 years I've been waiting for it, so...
I just was thinking about all that because in the Rush movie, in the documentary, did you guys see mm-hmm. it? Yeah, where he just says, you know, I like it when people appreciate my drumming, but if you come at me like I'm God or are weird to me, I am done. And so I picture him not reacting well to that kind of thing, but I guess if you're Rush, you do
well, that's
get people...
why the postcard to me, because I knew that, and I know behind-the-scenes stories like that.
Yeah.
Not where he's like a dick to someone.
No,
but...
I know somebody who is friends with those guys, and... and there's some, I have a lot of respect for those guys, but
yeah.
But I know that Neil is paranoid about getting shot, stuff like that.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, yeah. I understand. Like,
and I can
I'm
see
sure
it.
There's been,
I'm sure he's received things in the mail from people who are just like, what the fuck?
I mean, again, it's like, when did they start playing? In the late 60s, early 70s? So mm-hmm. They were so 70s. Huge. And you're going to deal with people saying crazy things. And,
yeah.
I understand his whole thing. I get it. Mm-hmm. I get it. And I know he's not trying to be an asshole.
No, but
I mean, I've heard stories where it's a bit paranoid.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like, I've heard that he has to, like, when they play a show, the house lights stay down until he's on his bus and the bus is pulling out and then the house lights go up. So that, and he travels with, like, a, you know, somebody who's, like, he has somebody who travels with him often to, like, you know, be a barrier, I guess. Now, this is just what I've heard. It might not be true.
And also, like, given his personal life,
yeah.
you know,
Oh yeah, well,
just want to leave him alone.
What he went through in his life, and then to actually pick himself up again and go back out on the road. Of course, everybody's going to be like, whatever you want. Like,
yeah.
You know,
yeah.
Never mind the fact that he's already like one of the greatest rock drummers ever. Like, yeah. You know, but. Yeah.
So that's why I thought like that letter back to me was that I didn't expect an answer at all.
No, that's awesome. I don't even care. 3 years. Think about sending out like a letter or trying to communicate with someone you don't know.
Yeah. He doesn't know me.
The ball is really in the other person's court. And if they do respond, because there's such a pile up sometimes.
Now, wait a minute. I don't want to send people going. I don't want to have people going, oh, all you got to do is write a letter to Neil.
I knew someone
who passed on the letter to him.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah.
So it wasn't as if I just wrote him and he wrote me back.
Okay.
So it was not unexpected from his point, like his end.
Mm-hmm.
It was probably presented to him.
Right. So right. Right. Right.
I should say that.
So people should send
not write
email.
Neil.
No, don't. Yeah.
Don't write Neil.
Add Neil.
You're not going to get an answer.
Don't be afraid.
Don't
get
mad when you don't.
Facebook.
Yeah.
But I was going to say that's the thing though. These days you don't need to send a letter. You just tweet to somebody, and often you might get a response.
Yeah. Like,
you
know, I would be interested in knowing if Neil Peart does have a Twitter.
He doesn't. I don't think.
Oh my god.
Rush have one. It's just Rush the band, but they don't do it. Yeah. But
tour dates up now.
Yeah. Exactly. Right.
Tweets like that.
Yeah.
I mean, but. You know, there are lots of people who are on Twitter that you can get in touch with, and I'll answer people back if I feel that it's something I can answer, you know.
Yeah.
I mean, if it's just like, how's it going, then I'm not going
to tweeted you.
Yeah.
You want to do our podcast next week?
Exactly.
I think you might have laughed at my jokes.
I probably
did. In 2003.
I was probably drunk.
Yes, that's probably why. And Chris, was one of the earliest people who was into, like, I guess he had a pipeline with a friend about, like, cool comedy or something. Mm-hmm. But it was at that show in 2003 where he kind of was like, hey, do you know this guy, Louis C.K.?
Yeah, we went to see a lot of comedians when we were making that record.
Yeah, that's a great place to see comics.
Like, there were always benefits, and you'd see, like, mm-hmm. Sarah Silverman. And,
mm-hmm. And that was such a great time to, like, be seeing someone like Sarah Silverman, because her jokes, it was, like, right around.
Probably she was on stage. She was on stage with, like, a little notebook.
She's so clever.
Oh, but I have a story to end this whole thing. My story, when we were making Action Pack, Mike Nelson, our manager, was down hanging out with me, and we went out one night, like a Tuesday night. And nothing was going on at Sunset. And so we're going to head back. And then we just went to the Comedy Store just to see what was going on. And we walk up and we're like, anything going on tonight? And the guy's like, yeah, Chris Rock's on stage right now. It's $5. And we go in and Chris Rock is doing like his whole stand-up that ended up on one of his HBO.
Wow.
The whole Clear Heels thing, like if your daughter or something. And like, he was like, where that fridge is from me. And he just did his whole thing. And then the next comedian was introduced and he just walked out of the room. He's like, I'm not fucking following Chris Rock. And then Carlos Mencia, is that the guy?
Oh, yeah.
He got up and did a whole thing. And at the very end, he stuck the microphone in his mouth and drooled all over it and then just handed it back to the next comedian who was coming up. It was just like,
because probably he'd been given some shit by the comedian who was following him, because he was probably bumping him.
Yeah.
Because that's what he's famous for.
Right.
And yeah, he's reinvented himself right now.
Oh, really?
He had a whole breakdown where he was like accused of stealing material,
stealing jokes,
all that stuff. And now there was a New York Times article recently that was about how he's lost 40 pounds. And
is he funny?
I don't really think. I never really liked his stuff that much.
Yeah,
I wasn't a fan either.
Yeah, me
to be honest.
So I'm gonna assume it's gonna.
And
be
it's
the
not
because
of public opinion. I mean,
no.
I
to me, he just has that Dane Cook thing where it's like, why is your personality so clearly not that like serious and kind of aggressive, and that's shining through?
Uh-huh.
That's what shines through more with his material to me, is like his like weird personality freaks me out.
But everybody hates Dane Cook.
I don't mind Dane Cook.
I think he's actually pretty funny.
But I feel there is this thing with Dane Cook where there's like a regular guy who's not.
It's
trying to be funny.
Jealous.
He's just trying to be a dude.
It's jealousy, man.
I don't know if it's jealousy.
Because he's the biggest friggin' comedian around.
Yeah, that's the thing. I think it's, I mean, certainly within the comedy world, there's got to be like a, I mean, people get into comedy to deflect things, shortcomings in their lives anyway.
There's big comedians who are not disliked You know?
Right.
There's like, and you know.
Here's this funny guy, good looking funny guy.
But is he the Ed Hardy of comedy?
I think that he's viewed as that. I think he's viewed as that. He put out his thing called Tourgasm, you know, right. Which is like, he just is kind of like cheesy and to some people, which is fine because that's just an opinion to have. I personally think that, but at the same time, I don't know. Like
whatever makes me laugh the same way.
I agree makes with you. And I've laughed at Dane Cook for, you know, in the past.
I'm not going to wear a Dane Cook shirt.
No. I just think that he's, maybe it's just that he takes himself really seriously. Seemingly.
Oh, he does?
He's one of those guys who kind of has such an internet presence that if you actually say something about him on the internet, there is a chance he'll be like, hey, you.
Fuck you.
Well, yeah. I kind of like that.
Well, I see that with Patton Oswalt and Jim Norton and people like that. Like they just like rise to it.
Mm-hmm. I think there's a bit of a double standard actually. Where
Joe
Rogan
too.
Someone like Dane Cook will get like a lot of shit for doing stuff, but then you know someone who's more of a
underground
internet nerd hero, or I don't want to say nerd, but like a
you can
there's
say
a
nerd.
Thing in comedy Patton now Oswalt. Where it's like in wrestling there were people who like followed the backstage and what was really happening and all that. They were called smart marks. And there's like a movement like that I feel in comedy where there's people who really think, even though they're not inside, because they're listening to so much comedy podcasts, because they know who's not getting on pilots, because they know what's going on with Patton Oswalt, you know, what play he's in now, that they have an inside track. And there are good guys and bad guys. It's weird. It is almost like a wrestling thing.
Okay.
Yeah, we're done.
We're really
you wrapped it up, Tony. You said and to wrap it up. And then
was that your way of ending the podcast?
The Chris Rock thing.
Yeah. Oh, I didn't know.
But we got a lot of good stuff after.
I thought
that,
you just wanted to change the subject, but that was you making the executive decision. So
I got a whiz.
We're done.
I got a whiz.
Yeah, I gotta go anyway.
You got a whiz out.
I got a whiz out. I got a whiz in. Whiz home.